Christian Parenting.
This is Be Love, Do Good Podcast, and I'm your host, Christy Hayes, mama to two, founder of Be Strong Story, and author of the children's book, The Lunchbox Note, a true story of how a lunchbox note that said, be strong, protect the weak, love everyone, changed our life, and created a mission for our family. Join us each week for conversations that inspire our families to live out true compassion, kindness, and what it looks like to be love and do good in our communities. It may take us out of our comfort zones, you guys, but I promise it will put us on a path to see others, love others, and quite possibly change the world. Hey everyone, welcome to Be Love, Do Good Podcast. I'm your host, Christy Hayes, and I'm so excited to bring you my guest today, Terry Chris. Terry is a pastor. He is an author. He wrote this lovely book called Loving Samaritans, Radical Kindness in an Us Versus Them World. He's been to 65 countries. He just got back from Israel. We talk a lot about what it means to be the hands and feet of Jesus. What does it mean to love others, others who are different than us, others who maybe some people give us a hard time for loving. We talk about belief systems and what would Christ do? How do we teach our kids to do this? How do we teach our kids to get out of their comfort zone and love others well? It's just one of those interviews that I just could talk forever with him. So please enjoy my interview with Terry Christ. Hey, Terry, thank you so much for being with us on the Be Love, Do Good podcast. We're so excited to have you talk about your new book and just really living out this life of radical kindness. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Christy. It's a joy to be with you, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
We talked a little bit on kind of the intro. I love talking to all my guests just to see what they're up to. And you did say you were a little jet lagged because you just came back from Israel. And I know that is something you said in there that you have visited 65 different countries. Tell me a little bit about your travels before we kind of get into your book.
I came of age in ministry at a time when the church in large was focused on global missions. I think some of that seems to have changed a bit these days, and we're much more localized and community oriented. But we saw the world, as Wesley said, as our parish, and the opportunity to serve people and love people across the planet was something that was thrilling at the time. And so early on, I made my first missions trip that led to a second. And before long, I had traveled, particularly during my 30s, I traveled into over 50 nations alone over the course of a decade. So
wow.
Was back home on the weekends, pastoring a church, parenting kids, being present to my kids from all over the world. And then since then, I have gone back to many of those countries, some as many as 15 and 20 times, while also continuing to visit new and exotic places, so to speak.
Yeah, that's awesome. Tell me how many kids you have.
I have three sons, okay. Three beautiful daughters-in-law, three grandchildren, and one.
Oh, so fun.
Yeah.
I love it. I have a son who's 15 and a daughter who's 12. And I'm the girl who had the brothers, was the sports mom. You know, I wanted to be the sports mom, wanted to be all boys. And so when we had a girl, I was like, I don't even know what to do with this. Like, I don't know how to do hair. I don't know how to do makeup. I don't know how to do all that stuff. And so I always said I wanted a full house of boys, but it is beautiful that we have the boy and the girl. But I'm sure your house was full of messes and all the things that boys, that happened with boys.
Absolutely. Yes. I will quickly add, we now have a granddaughter. So our second grandchild is a now five-year-old, redheaded, fiery, full of life and energy and zeal, bright and curious and just a brilliant human being. So we finally got
and the princess of everybody, I'm sure.
Yes, she is. It took a generation, so to speak, to get to the girl, but we got to the
yes.
girl.
You got it. One of the things that I have loved just researching and learning about you is that you kind of went through this getting out of your comfort zone. You've been to all these countries and these different things. But one of the things that we love talking about on this podcast is helping families get out of their comfort zone to love others well. So tell me a little bit about your guys' journey before the pandemic when you kind of moved and got out of your comfort zone. Tell me what led to that and how that happened.
Well, we all love our comfort zones, don't we? I mean, we just by nature do. They don't require anything of us. They allow us to be in control. They don't make us vulnerable. They're low risk. And even hearing my story over the last minute or two describing traveling the planet, one might think he doesn't have comfort zones, but I have as many as everyone else does. And it seems that God likes to work in our comfort zones to move us into a place where that we are dependent upon Him, we're reliant upon the Holy Spirit, and we are consistently looking at the world, not through preconceptions or misconceptions, but we're seeing life as it's unfolding in the here and the now on a day-to-day basis. And so the story I talk about in Loving Samaritans is just one of many disruptions from comfort zone to comfort zone. And briefly, it was the relocation of my wife and I from the suburbs into central Midtown Phoenix. After raising our kids in the tranquility of the suburbs, we felt like we wanted to spend the next season of our lives not outsourcing our compassion through others, not writing checks and giving directives so that other people would be involved in proximity, helping people, but doing it ourselves, just getting back to life and ministry. And sometimes as we build churches, and I'm a pastor, fundamentally, you're going to hear everything that I share today through the lens of being a pastor. I love being a dad. I love being a pastor. And, but I think what often happens is when you build a church, particularly a church that grows and becomes large and flourishing, is that you tend to then give directives as to what should be done. And there's nothing wrong with that. You, having worked with NGOs, know the power of marshaling as much resource as you can to make a difference. That has its place. But sometimes you can then just become disassociated with what's happening in the real lives of people. So we moved into Central Phoenix into a high-rise building. I'm here today on the 14th floor, and the early part of the book centers around what has happened with my interactions with my neighbors in the elevator. But I want to quickly add that after sending the manuscript to the publisher, the elevators went down. And for 3 months, I climbed 15 flights of stairs.
Oh.
So I know my neighbors better than ever, and my neighbors know me better than ever. And now we have one elevator that has been repaired, so we're all packed in there. And it is a microcosm of humanity, and I'm loving every moment of it.
One of my favorite phrases is proximity matters. Mm-hmm. And I think this can be tricky for those of us who do live like in the suburbs. And so, you know, back in the day, I would say we need to live in the city. It's the only way that my kids can see, you know, what's really going on. Because if they live in this bubble of the suburbs, they're only seeing people like them. They'll never see, you know, the homeless and the vulnerable. And when we don't see that, it's hard to have a heart for that. So I always kind of say, you know, I can't expect my kids to have a heart for the world if they never see the hurts of the world. They never see anything. But I'd love you to speak to those, because I don't want to tell everyone that they have to move into the city. I don't want to tell everyone they have to move into right next to the homeless shelter. I think years ago that felt like this, this thing that, you know, I needed to do, or, oh, my kids will never love the poor. They'll never love if we aren't down there. But I will have to say, this is the first time that we've actually lived in a city in all of our years. But it was so important for me to make sure that my kiddos were able to see others and to see those who were different than them. So tell me a little bit about how we do that. If we don't have the option to move right next door to our neighbor, how can we be with the vulnerable? How can we help our kids see something that's different than maybe the bubble that they're in right now?
Yeah, I love that, because I don't think it is about concentrating people of faith into, you know, a common geographical location. I think we can live missionally in the suburbs, or we can live missionally in the heart of the city. So it's less about where you're living and more about living with awareness, living with intentionality, recognizing that for us, even where we lived, it's not that it wasn't a mission field. It's just that the needs were different. And while we were there, we lived on mission. In fact, I've discovered, having lived in gated communities and now living at the urban core, that the needs are the same because people are the same. Where we lived in the suburbs, we just had a thin veneer covering the pain and loneliness and the neediness inherent within all of us. Being here in the urban core, that veneer isn't present, so it's pushed up to the surface. What I would encourage people to do is exactly what I know you've done, and that is you take your kids outside of the neighborhood to meet people. Don't have to relocate there, but you can meet people. You can connect with people, visit different restaurants across your city, take your kids not just to, you know, the kid parks and the museums and the children's museum, which is a big thing for my granddaughter right now, but actually take them to some real live restaurants that are neighborhood restaurants, some coffee shops, you know, get out of the bubble. But then when you go back to the bubble, you know, treat it as if it isn't a bubble. Treat it as if it is the mission field, because regardless of where we live, we are to live with eyes wide open and our hearts wide open to the people who are around us.
I love that you said it's everywhere, because I think back in the day, I would say, oh, we need to live a certain place. But what I'm learning now is that sometimes, I love that you said the veneer, there's a mask, but there's hurt everywhere. And I am learning that everywhere that we live, everywhere that we are, we can be that light that shines. There's, you'll like this, the phrase that we say in our house that I've said to my kids since they've been in kindergarten, every day they leave my car for school is eyes wide, light shine.
Love it.
And so how do we practically live that, you know, live that out? And so I love that you're doing that. In your book, I want to just ask you just some practical things, some tangible things that people could leave here today and go, okay, I want to be more radically kind to others. In your book, Loving Samaritans, Radical Kindness in an Us Versus Them World, you talk about it's not enough to tell people about the radical kindness of God, because we're really good at that, I would say. I mean, we're really good at saying, like, here's God's kindness for you. But what is really hard is expressing that kindness. You say it's not enough to tell people about the radical kindness of God expressed in and through Jesus. We must demonstrate it too. Otherwise, it won't be perceived as genuine. Why do you think this is so hard for us? And how do we change that up a bit?
It's hard for us just because that it requires risk. It requires vulnerability. It requires a commitment to people without the assurance of outcomes. And none of those things.
Say that sentence again.
It requires a commitment to people regardless of outcomes, without the assurance of outcomes. Quick story here. So one of the young ladies in our church had shared her faith consistently with her grandmother for many, many years, and her grandmother was resistant to her faith, and it became a pain point in their relationship. And finally, she realized that in order to have any sort of a relationship with her grandmother, she was going to have to sort of dial back her proclamation of the gospel, which I very much believe in. And so she put that into the hands of God, just sort of trusting, well, completely trusting that, you know, he would work, the Spirit would work in the heart of her grandmother. And it took all the way up into the final hours of her grandmother's life. Her grandmother, laying in a hospital bed, called for this young lady in our church to come. And she came and got up in the bed with her grandmother. And in the final moments of her life, was able to share her faith. And her grandmother received Jesus before stepping out into eternity. Now, every story doesn't end that way, but we can't presume to know the outcome. And what I love so much about that story is that it took her consistent presence in order for that moment to come. And I don't want to be the guy that when that moment comes in the lives of my neighbors, my friends, my family, that I'm absent, that I'm not present. There's this little line in the Gospels where that Jesus is in the home of a Pharisee having dinner. And the phrase in the Gospels is, as unlikely as it seems, some had come to follow him. I've often thought, if that's unlikely to God, it's unlikely that you're going to follow me. How real is that? We don't know the outcomes. We don't know that the people we engage with are going to end their life on the note of surrendering to Jesus or not. Those outcomes aren't in our hands. What is in our hands, however, is that we are present, that we're engaged, and that we recognize ours is an embodied faith. We have a show and tell gospel. And in this show and tell gospel, when the showing is absent, the telling isn't always heard. And so living this embodied faith in which we are living full-hearted with the people around us, fully connected to them, doesn't guarantee an outcome, but it certainly increases the likelihood that through our lives of love and compassion and empathy and kindness, the seeds of the gospel will be planted in theirs.
I love that. I love the embodiment. So the thing that I've really been learning these last 10 years is just that when you are so close to Jesus and he is just filling you completely, then what comes out of you is him. And so I don't have to do a 3-point presentation of the gospel to the homeless person down the road. They don't need that right now. What they need is whatever it is, a warm, you know, meal or whatever it is. We built some really neat relationships. We have our favorite guy who lives down the street. His name's Melvin. And it's just been such a joy to have a relationship with him. And to, but do I don't, every time that I see him, I don't say, God loves you or come to church with me or any of that. I don't even know that he would know all those things. I mean, sometimes we do, but for the most part, we're just meeting him where he is and just loving on him. Give him a Christmas present because he loves the Cowboys. We talk about the Cowboys, getting him a Dallas Cowboy sweatshirt because he enjoys that. You know, just being relationship. And I think what you said is not knowing the outcome. I think sometimes when I used to go into these mission opportunities with families and we would go into these, you know, homeless shelters or whatever, and they would immediately wonder why they weren't being thanked for being there or giving something. And what I realized for so long is many of us do the good thing or do the thing for us to feel good versus doing it because we love the other person right in front of us. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think this relates back to the idea of withness. Withness. There's something about presence that when we are with people, that withness can often lead to witness. And sometimes the greatest witness is our withness. You know, I'm not quite exactly sure when the podcast is going to air, but we're at a time of the year, either coming into the end of it or coming out of it for many people, where that we celebrate the coming of Jesus, the incarnation, Emmanuel, God with us. So the beautiful thing about Jesus is that he walks with us. He sits with us. He is present to us. And you see the beauty of that all through the Gospels. To your point, I think oftentimes it is hard for people to hear the message of the good news of Jesus when the growling of their stomach drowns out the sound of our voice. So these acts of compassion that we do aren't secondary. Oftentimes they're pre-evangelism. Oftentimes they're, again, the showing part of this gospel. And when we demonstrated this embodied faith by loving people, caring people, and this can be as simple as being in the suburbs and taking an extra moment with the barista in Starbucks, you know, taking a moment with the food service worker in a restaurant, with the person checking you out at the grocery store. I think for each of us, we walk through a sea of humanity every single day, and we don't always see people for who they are. We miss the reality of their being, either because we've seen them so many times or we're so absorbed in our own circumstances in life. And so I think God is calling all of us to, again, I love that line, open our eyes and open our hearts. That sets the framework and foundation for genuine connections with other people.
I was trying to remember the phrase that it's Henry Nouwen, I believe, says, and I'm going to have to, I'll remember it. But it is very similar to that withness about, you know, compassion and empathy is suffering with the other. I want to ask you, one of the questions I want to ask you is being a pastor, and I think I hear this a little bit from different sides, that in order to stand up for our beliefs, we can't condone the behavior maybe of others. And so sometimes that looks, for me, It can look a little bit harsh, like we're treating someone harsh. And so I always try to tell my kids, even if maybe we don't believe the same lifestyle or they don't have the same values as us, they are a child of God. We treat them like a child of God. And when you hear one of your friends making fun or saying whatever they believe, but it could in some way hurt the spirit of another, that is your cue to stand up for that. And so I'd love to just kind of speak to that. I know you are in ministry. I know there are probably times, and I would just ask you straight out, are there times when people maybe criticize you for loving others because maybe you're not standing up for your values or your beliefs? I feel like this is attention sometimes for us. It's not really attention for me because I'm done with that. And I just say we are loving everyone no matter what. But I think sometimes people can get stuck in that. Well, we have to stand up for this so we can't condone or whatever. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. I think we are most comfortable with these either or propositions, you know, this binary response, either yes or no, it's black or white. And we don't know what to do in between those two positions. What I love about Jesus was that he navigated it all, never compromised truth. But the way that he presented truth was so compelling that it opened the hearts of people to want to ask him questions. And he even then didn't answer every question. There are 113 questions asked of Jesus in the Gospels, and he only answers two or three of them. So he doesn't feel compelled to defend himself, his position. You know, when I say his truth, I mean that most literally, because he is the truth.
Right.
But he didn't feel compelled to defend any of that. He answered whatever questions he felt were in the best interest of answering for the person in the conversation. And he didn't answer where he didn't need to. The story of the Samaritan woman embodies some of the most provocative issues of the times. And this is what I love about the story and why I've written about it in Loving Samaritans. It's because Jesus has a conversation that is the longest recorded conversation in the Gospels. And it's with this woman at the well. And if you look at the issues they discussed, they are representative of the most complex issues of our times, the most provocative issues of our day, issues that I was told you don't talk about in polite company. You don't bring up at dinner parties. You don't bring up with strangers. It talks about things like race and ethnicity and agency and sexuality and division and borders of beliefs. And I mean, this is it. It's all there. And the amazing thing to me is that the woman wasn't rebuffed by Jesus speaking truth. So that says to me that truth isn't the problem. It's never the problem. Truth is the means of liberation. If we make it an instrument of oppression, then something is fundamentally missing. The truth is beautiful. The truth sets people free. The bigger issue, and the thing that I think most people struggle with, is the tone in which the truth is delivered. Mm-hmm. And this is where I think as Christians, as a pastor, as a follower of Jesus, as one who loves the church, this is where I think we have to improve. We have to get better in our tone. Our truth is not in need of adjustment, and it's not, we don't have the authorization to change the truth. The truth is timeless and timely, and we need to be very, very mindful of that. But we can love people in such a way that our truth, even if they don't agree with it, doesn't rebuff them, repel them, reject them, mm-hmm. but invites them into friendship. It invites them into dialogue. It invites them into an ongoing conversation. And that's what I think is so important. When you think of truth on one end and you think of grace on the other, I envision them like a rubber band pulled very, very tightly. And it's just so much of where we are today. You know, the debate is, are we going to tell the truth? Are we going to show grace? And I think it's both. Love exists in the tension between grace mm-hmm. and truth. And we can find a way to do this because we see this modeled all throughout the life of Jesus and throughout the scripture, this idea of being truthful while at the same time realizing that all truth is timeless. But even Jesus didn't share all truth at any given moment in time. So that's a whole other conversation. That's important in parenting. You know, as a parent, you've got a lot of lessons, you've got a lot of knowledge, you've got a lot of wisdom, a lot of truth. Do you download that into your kid all at once, or do you bring them on the journey? And just as we bring our children on a journey of formation and reformation, I think we have to bring our communities on the journey of formation and reformation. So I know I'm saying a lot right there, but I think fundamentally that the challenge of speaking the truth in love is a significant one that we need to all undertake in this moment.
Yeah. Can you give me a story maybe of how you've helped your kids adopt this radical kindness, that they're still, obviously they still have truth, but they are loving others the way that Jesus loves them. You know, they're being the hands and feet of Jesus. How have you helped your kids show up for others?
So I've raised strong kids. I want to be clear on that. In fact, my wife and I were in a conversation the other day, and she said, "You raised wolves." And that was a compliment coming from my wife. I come from a small family. She comes from a large family. I come from two brothers. She has four sisters and a brother. And so we come from very, very different backgrounds. And I, early on, just said, "Sweetheart, I'm gonna treat them like boys. And I know you don't quite know what that looks like, but we're going to fight. We're going to tussle. We're going to throw some punches. We're just going to do what we do." And early on in our marriage, when our kids were really small, it took her a while because she thought every time we were in a wrestling match, it was, you know, a sign of conflict. And so back to the other day, you know, she said it as a compliment. We raised really strong kids who love Jesus and love the church and love others. And they express that differently. But it goes all the way back to their early childhood when we would have age appropriate, yet deep and meaningful conversations about it, what it really means to care for people. And I saw a glimpse of it as for a really quick story just yesterday. After coming back from Israel, after returning from the Gaza Strip, I brought some little dog tags with me that are being fabricated by the families of those who have relatives in Gaza as hostages right now. And it's simply to raise awareness. It says, "Bring them home now." And then it has a name in Hebrew. And so I thought, I need to give this to my grandson, but he's only 10. And he's a sweet, gentle, kind boy. Mm-hmm. He does like the wrestling stuff, but only in limited amounts. He is an artist and a sensitive soul, and he plays music, and he sings in the boys' choir. And he's just a beautiful, beautiful kid. And so he came out to the lobby after the service yesterday, and I said, "Hey, buddy, granddad brought you home something." I said, how am I gonna tell him about this? I mean, I found myself just kind of stumbling there for a moment. I said, "Do you know what's happening in Israel?" And he said, "Yeah, they're in war." And I thought, our kids oftentimes know more than we're even conscious of them knowing.
Yeah.
And so we need to navigate the age appropriateness, but sometimes in our fear of not having honest conversations with them, we fail to really equip them or to meet the information that they're hearing on a daily basis with actual truth and reality. So in that moment, it provided a beautiful opportunity just for me to have a simple and honest conversation with them. And I think that's what I want parents to really get. Your kids probably know more about everything in life than what you think. Have some really honest conversations with them. Drop some probing questions to find out what they know, what they don't know. But ultimately, teach your kids to love others. Teach your kids to live generous lives that are inclusive. That doesn't have to be at the expense of the truth that we hold to be dear and sacred, but it does position them to be used by Jesus to make a difference in the world. And that's what we want for our families ultimately. We want our families to glorify God and to be fruitful and live flourishing lives and to make a difference in the world. So absolutely. I really encourage people to have those honest conversations with their kids about the conditions of the world today and help them to learn the skills of listening as an act of compassion, listening as an act of kindness, listening as an act of empathy. Yeah. I encourage families to listen deeply and listen long. And oftentimes we do this best around the table, don't we? We do this when we've got our families there around the table.
That's good. I like what you said is they know this information. I mean, if they don't know it from the news, they're knowing it from their, you know, from their friends. I like to, I go through my text or Holden's text with him. And it's interesting. He has some group texts and I'm thinking some of the things that opinions and different things that his friends might have towards a certain group would not be the opinions that I would want him to have about someone or to be able to say, hey, maybe we don't have the same values or the same beliefs. However, this is how I think that we need to be treating them because this is how Jesus would treat them. And so it is very interesting when we go through these texts, it's like I'm seeing some different opinions and things that I'm asking him to be like, huh, do you agree with this? Do you not? Can you help me understand how you might do it differently? And just helping him kind of form some of his own opinions, yeah. But at the same time, giving him examples in our own lives as parents to say, you know, if we see a need, I always say, if you see something, do something. If you see a need right in front of you, if you see someone who's hurting right in front of you, I don't sit there and think, what are their beliefs? What are their values? Are they gay? Are they trans? Are they the, you know, all the hot button things? I don't think of any of that. I just see the need and then we meet the need. That is it. And so I'm trying to help our kids do that in a way that kind of, you know, when you build relationship with people, you get to know them. But some of the dearest people that we have friends have been friends with have completely different lifestyles than we do. They know where we are. I know where they are in their beliefs, but we love them. We sit around the table with them. We bring them in. And so I just want so deeply for my kids to feel that way, you know, as well.
Yeah, I'll say something that's probably a bit controversial here, but I believe it to be true. I don't think I don't think kids have to be taught to love. I think they are taught to not love. And what I mean by that is I think the natural orientation, and look, I've seen the church nursery. I know what happens when kids get together and one gets the toy that another wants. I get that. But kids, you know, fight over a toy and 5 minutes later, you know, are deeply in love with each other once again. So I think that the natural orientation within the heart of a child is to reach out to other people. A child that is without the kind of trauma that many kids, unfortunately, are experiencing mm-hmm. today. And I think that if we just nurture what's in them, we cultivate what's in them. And when our kids were really small, we would oftentimes distinguish our family values from other people by simply saying, that's just not what we do. So we didn't feel the need to disparage anyone else. We just said, hey, mm-hmm. we don't do that because we're Chris. And this is not what Chris do. And then later mm-hmm. on, as they were old enough to really understand our faith in its richness and depth and what it calls us to by the way of obedience and spiritual formation, then we were able to sort of expand that. We're not just doing this because we're Chris. We're doing this because we follow Christ. We're doing this because this is the way of Jesus. So that then becomes the identity of our children, that they know that they don't have to choose either loving people or, you know, living a life of authenticity based on the gospel. They can love people because that we're living a life of authenticity based on the gospel.
Mm-hmm. That is their identity. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes. I love that. Well, I want to ask one just last question, just some tangible advice for us. One of the things you talk about is three ways to live out radical kindness. Can you just briefly touch on those and then just give any way for parents, for anyone who's listening today, how to just be radically kind to others, maybe a first step of doing that?
Yeah, I think a couple of things, and there are so many things, but just a few things, three things I would touch on real quickly, is I think it's an act of kindness to connect with people around us based upon their uniqueness. So that means stop seeing people, you know, as these aggregate groups, as these blocks of people, voting blocks. They're Republicans, they're Democrats, they're MAGA, they're this, they're liberals. Or, you know, we tend to label people so mm-hmm. easily. And I think one of the kindest things we can do is just take the labels off of people. Let's, you know, they may be behaving in a way for reasons that I don't fully understand, and I don't need to presume that I understand that. So I think the important thing to do is number one, to just start looking at people around us, open our eyes to make contact with people, ask curious questions. That's sort of an oxymoron there, huh? Redundancy. Be curious when it comes to people. You know, we are lacking in curiosity oftentimes, and some of the richest conversations and the greatest points of learning are had when we're just curious. We're not threatened, and we can ask questions. I can ask you about your life. I can ask you about your lifestyle. I'm not endorsing it because I ask. I'm not rejecting it because I ask. I'm not afraid.
And you have no agenda.
I don't live with a vulnerability concerning my righteousness. I'm not afraid of being contaminated by your cooties. You know, my righteousness comes from Jesus. I didn't earn it. It is a free gift that is given to me based on faith. And so when you understand the righteousness of God in Christ as a free gift to you, that's a really big thing. And I think we need to teach that to our kids more and more. So that then leads to the third idea, which is what I've talked about already, and that's listening. You know, one of the greatest acts of kindness and compassion is listening to people, just really, really listening, being willing to sit in moments with them that may even be moments of silence without feeling the need to fill the gap, without feeling like that we have to share our faith right now. We got to share it because we're never going to have this opportunity again. Let's just be people who plant seeds of grace in the lives of other people, knowing that God will bring up the harvest in his time and season.
I love all that. Well, I'm so excited to dive into this more and have our listeners dive into your new book, Loving Samaritans, Radical Kindness in an Us Versus Them World. And so thank you so much for writing that. Thank you for being on here today and talking a little bit about that. And when this airs, it will be able to, you can get it anywhere. So we're so excited. And where can people hear more information about you or get to know you more?
You know, people can just check out our YouTube page, City of Grace, which is the church community that I serve. In addition to that, if you jump onto Instagram, I'm there. And I love to connect with people, love to have an opportunity to answer questions if people want to reach out to me. And the book, of course, is available through all book distributors. Thank you for having me. And thank you for giving me an opportunity to share this message that is very near and dear to my heart, because I believe it is the center of the gospel. We are called to love people and share acts of kindness and compassion and build bridges to people unlike us.
I love it. Thanks, Terry.
Thank you.
I hope you loved my interview with Terry. He is just incredible, and I think we can learn so much from him. His book comes out January 30th, so you can pre-order now wherever you like to get your books. Again, it's called Loving Samaritans, Radical Kindness in an Us Versus Them World. I encourage you to grab that, to learn more about Terry and what he does, loving others well. And I just thank you for being with us on this journey in 2024 and our commitment together to be, love, and do good in our families and in our communities, because I truly believe when we love others well, when we let our light shine, that we can change the world together. Have a great week.